Okay, good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming so early. For me, it's the middle of the night, but I'll try to cope. So indeed, I was talking about path integral optimization and complexity in two-dimensional conformal field theories. And this is work based in collaboration with Nilay Kundu, Masamichi Miyagi, Tadashi Takenagi, and Kento Watanabe that are all, that at the time were all in Kyoto, but now Kento moved to Tokyo and Nilay to India. And also the second work was with Shumit Das and Arpan Bhattacharya, that is a postdoc, and Shumit is a professor in Kentucky. And also the last work is collaboration with Javier Magan, that is a postdoc in the Ephraim Qubit collaboration based in Bariloche. But actually, I'm going to also mention some work or maybe ideas in progress that I'm hoping to discuss with many of you during my stay here. I'll be here until Monday, so please stop and bother me in 233. Okay. So I'll give a brief motivation and a short background for our work, and then I'll describe for you the optimization of path integrals, some old and also new ideas. Then I'll move to Liouville action as a path integral complexity. I'll describe the concept and some result that we obtained. And finally, I'll discuss complexity for a class of simple CFT gates and the work with Javier, quantum computation as gravity. Then if I have time, please ask me questions. Actually, you can stop me anytime and ask questions if there's something not clear. Let me go. So kind of big motivation and the goals of our program that we have been following for a couple of years are as follows. They sound a bit ambitious, but we hope to make progress at least on some of them. And the big one is, of course, what's the basic mechanism behind ADS-CFT? We know how well it works, and it has been checked in so many examples, but somehow we're still missing the answer to this question, how to extract geometry from CFT state, or how states in conformal filters encode holographic geometry. And one kind of paradigm in this direction is geometry from quantum information or geometry from entanglement structure in states of conformal field theories. And in that case, over the years, there has been a lot of progress and of course also the whole collaboration. And we've been studying properties of entanglement in states of strongly coupled conformal field theories using dual to gravity and using Ryu Takayanagi and also covariant versions of this formula. But over the years, or at least recently, it seems like maybe it's not enough to specify the states only using this this tool. So maybe we need something more. I will elaborate on that. And the question is how much more of quantum information we need. And maybe we need to use some distance measure, information metric, maybe complexity. If so, are they all independent? What's the minimal set of tools that we should be able to accomplish the big goal? And finally, the second part of my talk will be actually focused on this last part, on the complexity and how to define it, or at least some ideas towards it. I'll make some comments on that, and in my talk or today I'll kind of focus on two of these points of the goals. Exactly, the first one, how to extract geometry from CFT states, which is the idea behind path integral optimization, and the second one is how to maybe define complexity in two-dimensional conformal field theories. So I'll really stick to the simplest case of 2D. And if you ask me, I will have some maybe comments on generalizations to higher dimensions. Okay. So let me start with some kind of now history or background, which dates back to papers of Giffre and also Brian Swingle and lots of other developments after that, which basically come up with an observation and an idea that maybe one mechanism behind, or one trick that CFT might encode the information about geometry is through some tensor network-like optimization. So this is geometry, the relation between tensor or geometry and tensor networks, or sometimes people call it ADS tensor networks. But basically, it started with the observation of Brian that the famous Mera tensor network of Giffre looks like a time slice of ADS background, and this has been a bit kind of ad hoc observation, but somehow it's amazing how much developments and kind of momentum been generated and sparked over the years. One of the kind of supports of this observation was that the famous Rutaganagi formula that computes entanglement entropy in the CFT duo by a geodesic in the background resembles also a kind of cut through the Mera network that would basically be some kind of upper bound on entanglement of the number of sites at the boundary. So somehow through this, maybe there was a hope that maybe geometry can be thought of as some kind of tensor network approximation to the CFT wave function or wave functional, at least in some large n limit. And I'll try to make some comments on that. And actually, our work was really motivated by this initial observation. It's as you probably have heard, it's very promising, but somehow there are also some weak points. It's very general. So for ADS CFT, we need this kind of observation to really make it like a paradigm, or to make it to really to substantiate more on this. We would really need to generalize to strongly interacting CFTs, and that was somehow motivation behind our goal. But I hope by being in perimeter with Giffre and people you have heard and seen this many times, so I'll not talk much more about this. And somehow this tensor network language or observation from Brian's observation became like a kind of natural language or kind of jargon of holography or ADS-CFT community. And even in the paper by Hartmann and Maldacena that studied the gravity dual of a global quench, there were many results, but I don't know if some of you actually went to the end of the paper. At the end, they actually gave some heuristic interpretation of the behavior of entanglement evolution in the global quench by some kind of tensor network. And they argue that the famous thermofield double state initially can be thought of as some kind of tensor network that describes two CFTs in this maximally entangled state. Once we evolved with time with this non-trivial Hamiltonian, then actually you could think about it as basically adding some layers of tensor network that grows with time in a way as time progresses, so it's proportional to t. It was kind of heuristic argument, but somehow if you put it against the behavior of entanglement, that actually entanglement between say two intervals, if you take interval A and B in each of the copy, entanglement saturates after basically the size of the interval. This growth actually sparked an interesting set of developments, and it was noticed by Lenny that actually, you know, even though entanglement entropy saturates after some time, this kind of network or in some sense the Einstein-Rosen bridge between these two CFT grows with time. So actually maybe the entanglement is not enough, and that was somehow beginning of the jargon. But the question is, what in CFT actually would see this growth of the bridge or growth of this tensor network after in the late times? And the idea of somehow Lenny was that it might be something related to complexity of the thermofield double state, however you define it, but actually in the kind of original papers, that would be basically the number of tensors in this kind of Hartmann-Maldacena tensor network description, effective tensor description of this work. So even though, you know, it was somehow just a comment, it sparked very interesting developments, and somehow this idea of complexity is very closely tied to the idea of tensor networks, at least ADS tensor networks. This is the way I see it. And finally, after Lenny's work, I wanted to actually make it more precise as well, and then define how do you measure the size of this network, or how do you you know, make this idea of complexity more precise. And I'm sure, again, you guys here at Perimeter know everything about it. And this led to the idea of holographic complexity proposal, that that complexity of this thermofield double state evolved with time could be computed as a volume of some slice in the bulk, or maybe some action or gravity action on the Wheeler-DeWitt patch in the bulk. But in general, you know, the kind of main motto of these ideas is that that complexity should have something to do with the gravity in the bulk, or the gravity that has something to do with this Einstein-Rosen bridge. So complexity roughly should be related to GR. And yeah, there have been many interesting works trying to make it more precise and how to regulate it, also by Rob and collaborators and Hugo and Shira, a lot of people probably not here anymore. But somehow, it also generates very, at least from my perspective, it generates a very interesting momentum in quantum field theory that had to do with the idea of, or basically definition of circuit complexity in general quantum field theories or CFTs, and brought back to life, or at least to our community, the Nielsen approach to complexity that I'll discuss a little bit more, and there has been many interesting works on this. And I would like to point that somehow these developments in complexity, they're again, maybe some new direction or new exploration of quantum information, but they somehow they can be seen as very similar to the developments basically the way they progressed is very similar to entanglement, in a way that originally the works of Średniki for black hole entropy were, you know, really GR motivated, but then they got their own life in many body systems and turned out to be very interesting. So actually, I would like to argue that this idea of complexity will hopefully will get its own life in quantum field theories and will evolve, progress on its own to many body systems. Okay, so this is very general background and motivated by this set of beautiful ideas that sound now like just really story. We try to, with group in Kyoto, we try to somehow make it maybe more familiar to ourselves in our own language, or try to describe it in our own language of quantum field theories, and in particular of path integral. Or we try to basically formulate this ADS tensor network in maybe a language of two-dimensional conformal field theories, in really working in the continuum and including interactions. So that was our goal number one. And the second one, we wanted to understand how to measure the size of this tensor network in the continuum, or maybe how to define this complexity into the CFTs. So this is the end of the introduction, and there's no questions, I'll go. Okay. So let me describe the construction. So in quantum field theories in general, if we want to talk about some wave functional, it's not like, the wave function is a very beautiful object that we all learn in quantum mechanics, but somehow when we move to quantum field theories, we are taught that maybe it's not so useful and relevant. We are really forced to compute scattering amplitudes and things like that. But still, the path integral is the most natural and beautiful definition of the wave functional in any quantum field theory. So basically, given a Euclidean action of your theory, we specify some boundary condition and we perform a path integral over all values of the fields with this prescribed boundary conditions, and this defines for you the wave functional. So if we want to understand somehow the version of a continuous tensor network using this language, we have to face the question, how do you optimize this object? Is there a way to you know, introduce optimization here? And then if so, how can we extract geometry from path integral for any given quantum state? If we succeed with this too, then is there a way to define the complexity of this object using the first two objects? Yeah. This will be the questions I'll try to answer in the next slides. So the idea of path integral optimization is as follows. We start with the original path integral, and we prescribe boundary conditions in some Euclidean time coordinate z. So for some historical reasons, we call this actually coordinate z, but this should be thought of just minus Euclidean time. And we have to perform the original path integral by doing all the Euclidean action integrals over all these parts of the Euclidean space. But in our construction, we propose that actually what's important is probably just this part here, but we could introduce we could do this network in a more optimal way, or maybe kind of simplified way, by introducing some kind of space-dependent mesh in a way that once we go deeper in this Euclidean time, we may need to do some kind of less this path integration here, and maybe even less here and here and so on. So you get the idea. And such that in this prescription, after we optimize, so I will tell you like how, what is the exact optimization procedure. After we optimize, we end up with some kind of optimal tensor network that is almost as good as the original one. And this tensor network looks like some kind of maybe discrete or like continuous version of some geometry in a similar way as the observation of Brian. And it should probably have something to do with hyperbolic space, and I'll tell you how. So that's a very cartoonish and logistic picture. And the optimization that we propose is done by comparing the wave function in the, So I should explain that basically this kind of changing of the mesh, how we do the path integral, can be thought of as introducing the metric on the space on which we do the path integration. And by comparing the wave functional with the same boundary conditions here for this kind of new metric and the wave functional for the original metric that we started with for the flat one, can be computed or is given by exponent of some functional of this metric of the background. And by simply minimizing this this number that will appear here, that for the time being, we just call path integral complexity. I'll tell you more about that later. By minimizing this object, we'll choose the optimal metric on the space on which we'll do path integration. This is the construction. I'll make it more precise in the next slide with formulas, but the idea is like.
So I have a question about the framework. So you introduced the UV cutoff. You said that you had an epsilon somewhere. Hmm? Is that correct?
Yes.
To motivate how to proceed?
Yes, so we start with some original theory, like some CFT on this space, and we have, in that theory, we have some UV cutoff, epsilon. Okay, and this tells us like how, what is the mesh this state in the boundary, in the original state. Then in the new state, we want to keep the same cutoff as we approach the boundary, but then actually as we go deeper in that direction, we want to change this cutoff. We want to make this cutoff space dependent in a way.
Why do you have this freedom?
Why do we have this freedom?
You want to make this cutoff space dependent or scale dependent, but why are you allowed to do that? So what are the constraints? Are you still preparing the same wave function at the end, or?
Yes. So as the wave functional of this boundary condition is still the same function, at least in the class of theories that I'll be studying, we have this freedom of putting the metric on the space in which we do the integration.
So your constraint is that you still prepare the same wave function?
Yes. You know, the kind of boundary condition of the wave function will be here. So this is the important part. In this number will be just the normalization that we use to extract the geometry. But the physics that you are really interested in has this freedom. So it will be cancelled by this ratio.
So do I understand that the metric here is a background field of the path integral?
Yeah, no, so the metric here that we'll introduce, I mean, if you think about it as a classical background field, you could think about it this way, but we want to just really introduce it as just this classical mesh. We will not do a path integration over the metrics.
Classical.
Yeah.
But could I thought of it instead to say that I started with this integral, path integral on flat space, and you wanted to think that you're sort of dividing the path integral up into epsilon squared little blocks, and you're evaluating e to the minus s.
Yes. On each of these blocks, yes.
Somehow connecting them all.
Yes.
And then rather than changing the cutoff, could I say that what I'm doing is I'm just changing the background metric?
Yes.
And I'm finding a way to generate the same wave functional, but I'm going to have fewer of these blocks on this other geometry. It still produces the same wave function.
Yes. And in fact, in this approach, we were really after this metric G, but in the actually original formulation of Tadashi as some kind of path integral, relation between path integral and tensor networks, they were really looking at the space dependent cutoff. But you can show that these two formulations are equivalent. or at least the states that you prepare at the boundary, you can think about it as introducing space-dependent cutoff or just a metric on the space you do puffily.
So, in what I was saying, in the set of words I said, I might have thought that a natural thing to evaluate sort of the number of gates means that I count the number of little epsilon squared blocks.
Yes.
Is there a sense in which that thing that you're optimizing is giving the counting that I just said?
Yeah, you really exactly.
Okay.
It's just a comment, but this dichotomy between the space-dependent cutoff and having an arbitrary background metric is sort of the starting point of what's called the local renormalization group, approach of Osborne and Jack.
Yes.
So have you thought about doing this when you also have other operators sourced by some?
Yes, that's precisely what we do in this paper with Shumi, Das, and Arpan, where we need to introduce some operator, but with some space-dependent coupling such that the action still preserves the violin invariance. Yes. Thank you. Okay. So how do we do it in two-dimensional conformal field theories? This is coordinate z is nothing but minus the Euclidean time. And the class of metrics that we can actually introduce in two dimensions is basically all captured by this simple metric that is related to by Weyl rescaling, this exponent of 2 phi, which is some Weyl factor to the usual flat space. And basically introducing the metric on the space in which we do path integrals means that putting your CFT on this metric. And you know, of course, that your action of conformal filters is invariant. Classically, you have invariance under this Weyl rescalings, but the measure of your path integral is not. And the measure of your path integral, this phi represents all general fields of your quantum of your conformal field theory. The measure of your path integral in this metric, in this Weyl rescaled metric, is related to the original measure by exponent of the Liouville action. And the Liouville action is the functional of this Weyl factor phi. This is the Liouville action that I will go into in the moment. But by these steps, and by definition, the wave functional computed in this non-trivial metric, this Weyl rescaled metric, is related to the original wave functional with the same prescribed boundary condition, by simply exponent of the Liouville field, of the Liouville action. This Liouville action at zero is just introduced for some cyclic property of adding the backgrounds. If you put phi one, phi two, you want some properties of the action to be satisfied, and that's why you subtract this value of at zero. But this will not be important in my talk. And the Liouville action, or what I called in the previous slide, the path integral complexity in this dimensional conformal field theories is given by this action. So this is just two-dimensional action with the kinetic term for this Liouville field, and then the potential that is given by exponent of 2 times the Liouville field. And the C is the central charge of your conformal field theory that you started with, and that in which you want to compute the wave functional. This is a very, let me stress, this is a very universal form, and only depends on this one number. So you can already see the universality here. Yes?
So I just want to make sure I understand. It connects to Rob's question. So there is no question about this is a definition, right?
Yes. And,
but you motivated it in the previous slide in relation to taking your path integral, breaking it into small pieces.
Yes.
And then looking at what's the minimal amount of pieces you need to put together to get the same
wave
function.
Yes.
So are you saying that this is giving you the number of pieces?
Exactly. So once you evaluate your optimized action, I will show it in the next slide, this optimized action will be computing nothing but the volume of the surface on which you are. So the number of pieces. And in fact, this is
this does not follow from a definition, you're saying.
It follows from the definition of Liouville action. So the Liouville action is just an action that describes for you two-dimensional Riemann surfaces of constant curvature. But once you evaluate it on shell, it just computes the volume of the surface, or area in this case.
The reason why you don't have the curvature term is because the right
on
the right.
Thank you. So in this case, I'm starting with the flat background. But in general, I could have taken any reference background here, and there would be a curvature coupling that would go as the curvature of the reference background times the field phi. Thank you. Okay, and then the path integral optimization is just given by the minimization of the action, of the complexity action that is now the Liouville functional with respect to the choice of the background, which means basically that the backgrounds that give us our optimal background, they have to satisfy the equations of motion of this action, sorry, the equations of motion of the Liouville action, which is the famous equation that the derivatives of phi equals to exponent of 2 phi, where this w is basically this Euclidean times z plus ix. And we choose the boundary condition such that as we go to the boundary, we want to reproduce the original mesh or the original cutoff that we started with, so that the value of this potential is just at this exponent of 2 phi at this value epsilon is equal to 1 over epsilon squared. And this is the general class of solutions or the background that will give us the optimal metric with these boundary conditions, but we'll be evaluating them for different states that are computed, that are prepared by different path integrals on different geometries. So for the vacuum, it will be just on upper half plane. For CFT on the circle, vacuum of the CFT circle, it will be on the disk, and I'll show you that in a moment. Let me just make two brief comments. One is that the most general solution, the regular solution of the Liouville equation is given by this form, that the exponent of 2 phi is just parameterized by two functions, one chiral and anti-chiral of this parameter w and w bar. And you can actually, this is a nonlinear equation, but you can actually linearize it, and you can show that this Liouville equation is equivalent to this two couple of Hills, so-called Hills equation, that are basically just two derivatives of the exponent of the phi, notice there's a difference of two. And you have to put this function t of w here into this equation, and this function is usually referred to as the energy momentum tensor, chiral or anti-chiral, of the Liouville theory. And it's given by just the Schwarzschild derivative of this function f, and this energy momentum t bar is just the Schwarzschild of this function g. And you can show that equivalence between this system of Hill's equation and the Liouville equation comes from requiring the chirality, so the derivative respect to bar of the stress tensor should be zero, and similarly for the t-bar with respect to w. Maybe this is a common technical comment, but this really underlies a lot of symmetry of the discussion that maybe will be important later.
Sorry, with the boundary condition, are you already inputting some geometry, some expectation about behavior near the boundary?
That's maybe a good question. I think from this perspective, I just want to have we just want to preserve this cutoff same as the boundary for all the states. So no matter what we'll do here, we always want to go back to this original state in the theory with this cutoff. I think this boundary condition can be rescaled. We can shift it such that the field satisfies, it becomes just one at the boundary with appropriate conditions. So I don't think it's so physically important, but I don't have a full answer to your question. So there might be more general cases.
Isn't it just that the Liouville equation is the second order differential equation and need boundary conditions?
That's right. That's right for union.
So probably you just have a set of solutions parameterized by certain boundary conditions.
That's right.
And presumably also this form of the solution depends to some extent on what kind of boundary conditions you choose, right?
Yeah, of course. But I mean, like, a kind of physics input in that particular cutoff, I don't really know. Like, definitely, it just, you can think about it. I mean, all these solutions of these equations are just, you can show that this equation is equivalent to the equation for the Ricci scalar to be constant. And by choosing different epsilon, you just change this constant value of the Ricci scalar. That's all we do. Okay, so let me write the examples. So you can show that, for example, for the vacuum, when we do the path integral on upper half plane, the solution of the Liouville equation that satisfies our boundary condition is nothing but just this Euclidean times minus 2. And this is nothing but just a hyperbolic upper half plane or just a hyperbolic space. And you could think about it similarly to the observation of Brian that you could think about that this looks like a time slice of of a dual background that would be basically time slice of ADS-free geometry. But let me stress that this is what I'm talking about here is extremely universal. It only depends on the central charge. So once you specify central charge, this value, this metric will appear for any of the theory. So that's just a message. But interestingly, if you do the thermofield double state, so you know that you have to do it by path integral on a strip, and then the inverse temperature of the thermofield double state is given by this number beta. And in that case, for thermofield double, you have to do the path integral over the strip between minus beta over 4 to beta over 4 in this Euclidean time. But actually, the solution of Liouville equation that satisfies the boundary condition, that on the strip it has to go as 1 over epsilon square on one boundary and the other boundary, is given by this one. And again, is given by, you can show that this is nothing but the time slice of the eternal black hole. So that's, again, a very neat extraction of the geometry from that path integral prescription. Finally, if we do the primary on the disk, so basically path integral preparation of a primary state is given a path integral on a unit disk with an insertion of some source with the energy H related to the dimension of the primary operator. You insert that source at the center of the disk, and you can show that the solution of Liouville equation is just this one with the right boundary condition on the disk. And again, you can show that this is a time slice of a conical singularity in ADS-free. So these are very universal properties of this construction. We also tested it, as it was already mentioned, for deformations of the CFT. Again, we can introduce a very particular class of perturbations by introducing a position-dependent coupling related to the local RG. In such a way that the whole action, the CFT plus the operator of the coupling, is invariant under Weyl rescaling. In that case, we can do the optimization, and we can show that the dual, again, the metric that satisfies the equations with the boundary condition is given by time slice of ADS with the scalar field. And this we compared with perturbative solution by Rob and Janet and Misha Smolkin. Yes?
One question. I thought on the left-hand side, you started with the cylinder. So you haven't talked, on the right-hand side, you have the bulk expressions, right? But I thought what you were doing is that you started in the cylinder in Euclidean time.
Yes.
And you were changing the metric there of the CFT.
Yes.
So how is it that you're interpreting that now as a bulk metric?
Oh, no, I'm just saying that, you know, I'm just giving you a set of metric that we obtain, that we extract from path integral optimization. I'm just saying that you can see that this is maybe a coincidence or you know, just a mathematical fact that the metric that emerged from this path integral optimization, they are equivalent to the time slices of dual backgrounds in ADS. But that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying I'm deriving the bulk this way, or this is just maybe like elaborating on the observation of Brian that it works for several states in the CFT.
An idea of how this connects to the old-fashioned way of solving Liouville theory?
Old-fashioned.
So we know how to solve Liouville. We know the spectrum.
Yes.
Normalizable states, there are non-normalizable uh-huh. states, and so on. So, how are these related to these solutions you're finding here?
I mean, the solutions. I'm not doing anything new with these solutions to the Liouville equations. They are the old solutions to the Liouville equations.
No, but I mean, we know what the CFT is, right?
Also, here it's. I'm not really using the. Liouville action, it's just some classical action functional for my background. I don't care if it's a CFT. Well, I think secretly I care, but in this setup, I'm not so much concerned about the properties of the Liouville as a quantum field theory. I just take it as a classical functional for the background, and it tells me which metric to choose, how to choose my mesh on the way I do path integral in the original CFT.
So there's no semi-classical limit of the Liouville theory in which this reduces.
Yeah, not in this part. Even though, no, not in this part. We can discuss it a bit more. But you could think about doing path integral over Liouville field or of the background metric as was already. But this is not what we are after here. In this case. Okay, so let me just mention that also there is an interesting connection between entanglement entropy and the Liouville field, and this comes back to the observation that that indeed the geodesic on the time slice was kind of roughly related to the cut through the tensor geometry. And basically, once we optimize the field, once we find for a particular state, once we find the value of the Liouville field, you can just apply naively Ruta-Kayanagi formula on that background. You know it will give you entanglement of an interval. And actually, in that case, it will be just entanglement entropy of a single interval will be just proportional to, there will be center charge over 6. And then this will be just integral over the particular value of the on-shell UVL field, optimized UVL field, over this, over just the geodesic. This is, for some reason, has this notation. But this is just the geodesic that ends on the boundary of this interval in our optimized geometry. This is just a mathematical fact that reproduces for you geodesics in between boundary points in this geometry. And from that formula, you can actually show that for a single interval, the most general form of the entropy is the very well-known example. That is a sum of the chiral and anti-chiral parts and can be written in terms of this function f and w of the solutions of the Liouville equation that I had before. Or maybe this one, yeah, it's also here. But actually, you can notice that this formula works in a funny way, in a way that it starts from this particular solution where we have two general functions f and g, and then somehow transforms this in a particular way that actually the value for entanglement entropy here, you see that you know, here I have some function f minus g in the Liouville solution, but after I did this integration, or maybe you want to call it some Radon transform and so on, the formula for entanglement entropy of the interval becomes just some kind of part of chiral and anti-chiral part. And it was Bartek actually checked some time after our work, also pointed that the relation between this value of the Liouville field and this entanglement entropy as the Liouville field, because you can clearly see that you can write this form entanglement entropy as in terms of the Liouville field. If you analytically continue, or if you basically take this endpoint W, there should be W bar here, into the endpoints of the interval U, between points U and V. And if you take the same function F and G, then actually this entanglement entropy satisfies the Liouville equation. It was actually observed earlier by Rob and Jan de Boer, Felix, and Michal. So this is a very interesting and a kind of close connection, of course, somehow kinematically fixed by symmetry between this background Liouville field and entanglement entropy of a single interval here, also in this kind of continuous tensor network version. Okay, so let me just quickly summarize the first part. So we propose how to extract the geometry from states of 2D CFTs. And by this procedure, we reproduce time slices of holographic geometries, the way I described. This is very universal, so it's valid for arbitrary 2D CFT at large C, also at large C, and also very strongly interacting. So we don't need only like free theories, it's very universal. The key role in this construction is, of course, played by Liouville action. And somehow Ruta-Kayanagi formula on this optimized geometries reproduce entanglement in CFT states. Deformations are under control, but there's still more to do. And finally, you know, once we have this construction, it will be very interesting to come back to more like traditional tensor network approaches or continuous tensor network approaches and try to study how it is exactly related to recent very nice works by Ashley and Giffran. I hope we can have more discussions on that later. Let me just mention some extensions of this construction. So one, these are some new ideas that I would be very happy to discuss. One is has to do with extended symmetries. So how do we go about CFTs which have some extended symmetries, like maybe Pott's model, like some things which have W algebras, etc. There are two hints how we can go about. One comes from also work by Giffre and his students at that time, that we can study, we can consider tensor network with symmetries where we have some Hamiltonian invariant under some symmetry, group G. And then in that case, we have some tensor network but that are the same as the original theory, but in addition, they also have to satisfy certain properties by the action of this symmetry object V on the tensor. They have to be invariant and so on. So that's one hint how we need to introduce more structure into our path integral optimization in some way. The other hint actually comes from the same work by Rob and collaborators that notice that if we consider entanglement entropies with CFT, for example, with W algebra, then you can define the usual entanglement entropy. You can think about it as spin 2 entanglement entropy and spin 3. And there's very interesting equations that are given by SL3 TODA equations that are satisfied by these two entropies. So then, it is very natural to think that maybe we should do path integral optimization in these theories with symmetries. And then again, by some transformation of the measure, we just replace the Liouville action by the Toda theory that has more than one field, and then study classical solutions of this Toda theory and what kind of geometries come about. This actually also is a little bit old program where people studied so-called W geometries back in the days that were classical solutions of Toda systems. But it would be interesting what it has to do with complexity. That's one idea. Yes?
Can you say more about the motivation to change your cost function in the presence of symmetry? So don't you feel that you have already obtained the cost function that tells you how much path integral you're using?
Yeah, but so I guess maybe the motivation also comes from your work in the sense that you have some tensors, but somehow if you choose the basis in the right way, you see that these tensors are block diagonal in a certain basis. That means that you can just use the information only in the blocks. You don't need to do it in a optimal way.
The geometry of the resulting network is the same.
Yeah, so I think, okay, so depends what you mean by geometry. I think there will be like some kind of spin 2 geometry and spin 3 geometry. So entanglement entropy or the Liouville, the certain combination of Toda fields that would give you the geometry. But the second geometry is actually, this is this construction called W geometries, which basically tells you for higher spins, how do you embed, say, surface into like CPN, general force.
Metric is not giving you
the full information about the geometry. It's our embedding of a 2D surface into CPN for SLN Toda. Yeah, so to fully specify any data. Thank you. Okay, a second idea has to do with the generalization of optimization for maybe time-dependent cases. And there's a natural way of, once you have a path integral, you know that there is also a Lorentzian version of it. And of course, for Lorentzian case, you don't really prepare some static cases, but you can talk about, in a natural way, about transition amplitudes. So say you have some Hamiltonian and some values of the field, some time initial and some time final. And then you know that doing a path integral of this prescribed boundary condition at some initial part, initial time slice, and final time slice with your Lorentzian action, computes for you this transition amplitude. So then by the same token, we can play our game by saying that now we want to study kind of optimal way of computing this transition amplitudes, but by introducing some background metric. But now this background metric is related to the vial rescaling. We are still in two dimensions, but not to the Euclidean, but to the Lorentzian metric. And then we basically, the measure transforms in the same way, but now the action is, it's not the Euclidean, but the Lorentzian action. So by taking a ratio of two transition amplitudes, you are again computing something like a time dependent version of path integral complexity. The construction is very natural and leads to a certain geometries that you can find, but somehow we haven't found, like, or at least I haven't found enough tensor network literature or counterparts or Lorentzian versions of this procedure to really put myself on firm ground yet. But I think that would be very interesting to kind of connect and see how to get some kind of right intuition. Some steps on that were given by Tadashi in his recent work, where when he generalized this construction to even more complicated setups, where you evolve between some slices for some generalized slices in the bulk with your Lorentzian action. In this case, for transition amplitudes, you just use the Hamiltonian, and you want to study how this Hamiltonian evolution depends on this background metric in an optimal way. This is something I would be also very happy to discuss. Okay, so if there's no more questions about the first part, I will go to path integral complexity. Do I have 1 hour or 45 minutes?
1 hour.
Okay, perfect. I mean, 15 minutes left. Okay, so how do we think about this object as this path integral complexity? There has already been some questions about it. Let me go back to it. So we have this Liouville action. It's proportional to the central charge of your theory, but actually has this kinetic term for this Liouville field and the potential. And then potential, actually, this is nothing but if you just forget about these objects, it computes nothing but the volume. This is just, you know, the overall factor of the metric. So this is really the number of tensors. And then Bartek was arguing that you can think about these kinetic terms as just a curvature, or maybe in the language of Mera as the number of isometries. But the point is that on the equations of motion, you know, the kinetic terms become the potential. So as I showed you before, this is just the d bar d of phi. So the whole action is just nothing but is proportional to exponent of 2 times phi, which just computes the volume or the area of the surface on which you compute, or which you do your path integral. So this kind of counts the number of tensors that you use, but in kind of maybe non-trivial way. You can covariantize it, so maybe, you know, for this action is just a particular choice of the metric for the most general two-dimensional gravity. So in other words, this path integral complexity that we're talking about is really just a 2D gravity action, classical action, given, obtained long time ago by Polyakov. So it's very non-local, but it's this Ricci scalar of the background. This is inverse box operator acting on the Ricci scalar, and this is some constant curvature lambda. It's proportional to the center charge. And if you choose this background metric, this one, or our one, this just simply becomes the Liouville action. So we can really kind of covariantize it. And then minimization of complexity in our formulation becomes really the full equation of motion of the 2D induced gravity. This is kind of great because it's somehow based on universal features of the CFT, valid for arbitrary center charge and really computable, at least for time-independent states. So we might now, you know, in the lack of definitions, or you know, we might compare it with other definitions and try to see what are the properties of this quantity as a complexity, if we buy it or not, and if it has something to do with gravity or not. But the questions are maybe like that remains are, what is there some relation to conventional notions of complexity in a way that, okay, we do path integral, Euclidean path integral, so this is really like operators e to the minus beta h, and this is not unitary. What kind of complexity it is, what are the gates, what are the costs, what about time dependence? So we try to elaborate on that a little bit more. And somehow this brought us back to this very nice development of Nielsen and recent works by Ro, Jefferson, and Rob, and also Shira, Michal, and Hugo, and Fernando, that brought back this ideas in a concrete way of Nielsen back to quantum field theories. And one notion of complexity that we wanted to consider, or we hope to make a link with the Liouville action, is this Nielsen approach to circuit complexity. I'll be very brief about it, but it basically it goes as follows. So we have some reference state psi r and some target state psi t, and they are related by action of some unitary operator that is just some path integral exponents of path order exponent of some local Hamiltonian, you might call it HT. And the idea is that now you might decompose this unitary into some infinitesimal or instantaneous gates in such a way that you start from some initial state I, that this unitary at the initial state is just this psi r, and then by applications of this path of gates in this manifold of unitary operations, you end up in this target state. And these unitary infinitesimal gates are such that they push you along the path. And then the idea of Nielsen is that you have to choose a cost function and a metric on this manifold of unitaries. But once you have done that with some you know, guidance, then you can associate the complexity of this object by simply a geodesic on this manifold of unitaries. So once you have defined the cost function or basically some functional on this space of paths of unitaries, then what you just need to compute is just a geodesic. And then the complexity of implementing this operator is equivalent to a geodesic. Okay, that I already said. And then the optimal circuit or optimal algorithm is kind of very geometric. It basically tells that you just have to free fall between identity and this final operation in U. And somehow, in general, as a comment, we can think of this Nielsen approach as simply as some kind of particle on a group manifold generalization. So we need to, by studying the actions of particle on maybe more general groups, we get back to geodesics equation, and they will naturally bring us to this Nielsen approach to complexity. So we really like this idea, and it seemed to work very well with free theories and so on. So we tried to see if there is any link to this Nielsen approach, how to make it more precise. And that was the work with Javier. Before I go there, let me just actually describe two maybe technical steps. One is that this unitary operator that is described by this Hamiltonian HT or infinitesimal gates can be expanded depending on your choices of gates and the setup. It can be expanded in the basis of some generators M I. And then once you the coefficients of this expansion, they lead you to definition of a cost function. There's a lot of freedom in that, but there's some nice geometric construction based on like Riemannian or Finsler geometry. And then we can define metrics in several possible ways in terms of these functions yi. But yeah, these are some local cost functions and can be, at least in many cases, they can be expressed as expectation values of this infinitesimal gate operator. I'll tell you a little bit about this later. Or this, they can be expressed in terms of Marakan transforms with some projections that you might need to introduce by telling which gates are heavy or which gates you want to penalize and so on. There's some kind of phenomenology of complexity that comes into these cost functions. But basically the target is the geodesic for a particular choice of the metric. And you just once you have your unitary expanded in terms of this object, the key is that you need to find, say, you need to use some killing form for these operators, for this generator's MI, for example, as used by Rob or other people. You can just use the standard one for some metric groups, such that you extract these coefficients of the expansion of this gate, and then you just compute the metric in a standard way by maybe putting some penalty factors and studying the geodesic on that geometry. And Nielsen did it. This basically reduces the problem of finding circuit complexity into a purely classical problem. And Nielsen originally did it for SU2N groups, and Rob and and others they studied the GL2R generalization of this construction, and we wanted to see if there is any way to make progress towards Virasoro using this construction towards CFT. So with Javier, we wanted to see if since this Nielsen approach is really so much based on the group theory, if we can basically take this kind of minimal core that we mean by CFT, which is just the two copies of the Virasoro algebra, if we can take that and then plug it into this Nielsen machinery and see what kind of results we get, how far we can survive the computations. And in particular, we wanted to study basically diffeomorphism of the circle with the central extension R. So this is the Virasoro group. Two copies of this in the CFT, they act on the Lightcon coordinates. Once we take it as a setup, then the question is, of course, is there a natural or some universal way to define gates or cost functions? And do they lead to some nice answers? And then if so, is there some way to derive a Liouville action? Is it the same as by applying Nielsen approach? Can you think about Liouville action as some sort of geodesic on a group manifold? If so, is it really related to our action or not? This is some program that we're still trying to understand, and we have only done a few steps, and I would be super interested in discussing this, and I will make some comments later. But
whatever input, apart from the Virasoro, whatever input do you?
Just the Virasoro. I just want to.
Why would you expect Liouville? Why not some other CFT? Or how would it change if you changed it?
I don't know that. I think nobody has studied that question, and we wanted to take it as a kind of separate question in a story of Nielsen approach to complexity for this particular infinite dimensional group.
Does that point that the political action, complexity action, related at all to?
Yeah, it is. Okay. So the results, let me just flash the results if I'll not have time to describe the details. But basically we can consider a subset of symmetry gates that implement this diffeomorphisms of the unit circle. There is one natural generalization of cost that leads to the so-called Alexeyev-Shatashvili geometric action on the coadjoint orbit. And this action, following Nielsen steps, becomes the complexity functional for this diffeomorphism function f. I'll show you that in the next slide. And then complexity action really becomes the Polyakov action of induced 2D gravity. At least with this particular choice, one particular choice of the metric. That's why we call it quantum computation and as gravity. This is just a very short summary, and I'll go what are the particular choices that we made, and I'll discuss what we might have done differently. So, okay, so the setup is very simple. We study just the unit circle, and the reparametrizations of this. So this is just a standard group of diffeomorphism of the circle that consists of just some vector fields on the circle. And then we do the central extension, so we extend it into some number C that is, you know, plays the role of the center charge in CFT, and then this extended group is nothing but the Virasoro. And then the group action is just given by composition, so we have some maps on this circle coordinates that we can study them infinitesimally and expand in the Fourier modes. And these maps, they just compose in the natural way of composition of the function on the circle. And then the gates, something that we would call gates, but basically generators that implement these infinitesimal transformations, are nothing but the most universal thing that you can write in CFT, which is the exponent of, and you can think about some path order here, but it's an exponent of the integral of this infinitesimal transformation times your favorite stress tensor. Once you do this integral for a particular, you know, choice of the reparametrization, then you just get this exponent of this, what we would call infinitesimal gate. And this infinitesimal gate here, sorry for being a bit chaotic, is written by just the infinite sum of this Fourier modes and then your generators of the Virasoro algebra. So this is the same as formula before, where now these are my epsilons and these mi's are just my generators of the Virasoro algebra. And I choose the condition such that this operator is unitary, so I need to choose that the star of n is just minus epsilon of minus n. For my talk, I will consider no phases. In other words, basically the central charge, because in other words, like basically all the generators would also have to have some overall phase that corresponds to this object R. I'll neglect these phases, but we can keep track of them through the whole computation. But basically neglecting them means that you associate cost zero to identity operator from the complexity point of view. And then how do you study a CFT circuit? So CFT circuit would be basically this particular reparametrization, this diffeomorphism of the circle, but you now label them with some parameter tau that goes maybe from zero to some particular value. And at some time equal to zero, you are implementing some trivial reparametrization, just identity. And at some final time tau, or you can set it to one, you implement some kind of final value of the reparametrization that you are really interested in. And this is your manifold of, you know, unitaries or these reparametrizations. And you promote this into the function tau, a function of, you know, two variables, tau and z, with this particular boundary condition. So that's the setup. And what is interesting is that this is the class of symmetry gates in a way that, you know, they are just representations of your group. So actually now your protocol, your path, is just a path in the group. And then you compose these infinitesimal gates by simply, you know, the way you compose representations. So this is just U of the product of the gate. And then again, the instantaneous infinitesimal gate is just nothing but exponent of now your stress tensor, but now you have epsilon of tau of z, and this is, you know, this is just this infinitesimal version of this function for each value of tau between 0 and 1. You can actually check by using this relation that the way that this gate moves you along the curve in your space basically relates into the functional relation between this infinitesimal parameter epsilon and your original function on which you are, or maybe in the coadjoint orbit language for people who are familiar, you can write this epsilon that tells you on which coadjoint orbit you are. And this epsilon is given in terms of the ratio of the inverse function f to the derivative of the inverse function, maybe some more complicated function of tau on f. And you find this actually a lot in this literature on the quadjoint orbits, where you have some funny functions, inverse functions of two variables, where for each value of tau, you define inverse function by having f of in the second variable of the inverse function equals to the identity for any value of tau. So maybe you're not used to this But this is what we mean with the inverse function of two variables. And then complexity now comes into question, what is the cost for these reparametrizations? And one way.
Sorry. You want to comment on the states, the reference state, and the target state?
Okay, so the reference state, very good, thank you. So the reference state I would like to consider is maybe just some vacuum here. So I would have, some trivial. The way to think about it is that each of these reparametrizations, you could think about it as just a conformal transformation, right? So if you compute entanglement in this particular state, it's of a single interval is just your usual formula. But after you applied some diffeomorphism into that state, you might go to, say, BTZ black hole, BTZ, you know, conical singularity, and so on. And this is the type of transformation I'm interested in. So say, what I mean here, for my particular purpose, I will, this psi r will be just a vacuum, and then the final state will be just some BTZ or conical singularity, and I want to know like how, you know, what's the cost of going from the vacuum to some particular conical singularity. That would be one example. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so actually this cost functions, Javier spent some time on studying them, and actually he found some interesting procedure by actually reproducing Nielsen approach or Nielsen results for cost function by studying them, the expectation value of this infinitesimal gate in particular states. And actually two natural definitions for that program was that you basically take the infinitesimal gate and then you compute the one-point function or two-point function in a particular state. And after some thought, we actually, you know, it was kind of motivated by what we wanted to get. So we wanted to reproduce the Liouville action, and somehow doing some inverse engineering plus some guesses, we came up with these two natural cost functions for the metric on this manifold of unitaries. And that involves basically, I'll give a nice next quick slide why this is natural from the Nielsen perspective, but for now, we basically took this infinitesimal gate that was just this q epsilon, which is just the integral of epsilon times t, and then we computed expectation value on a particular curve on which we are, so we have to take this uf, and then this is our starting point from the primary state from which we start. So for, I just told to Rob that we started from the vacuum and we could study just some reparametrizations of the vacuum, but we could actually put any primary here. And this actually, from the quadjoint orbit perspective, this is very natural because this will just label the base of the orbit on which you start with, and then you do reparametrizations. And then once you have this function, then you just compute the complexity. And you know, by a very simple computation, just using Virasoro algebra, you can compute this expectation value, and you see that one-point function actually, or also this two-point function, this one at large c, they become the same, and they just give you a Schwarzian action for the complexity functional for this function f, and where f dot is just the derivative respect to tau, and prime with derivative respect to sigma. And actually, this was already known that this functional from the works of Shatashvili and Alexeyev, that this is, again, nothing but the Polyakov 2D gravity action, but in a particular choice of the gauge. So this was kind of very nice and reassuring that this is one particular interesting choice of the gauge that reproduces something what we would expect from at least complexity that has something to do with gravity. This was nothing but just doing Nielsen approach to a Virasoro group, single copy of the Virasoro group. We could have done the same by just introducing the gates of this type, like basically adding T and T bar in a decoupled way. And that would reproduce for us in large central charge or using one norm, just the sum of the action for some function F and G. And actually you can show, because you are interested in a purely classical aspect, that the Liouville action is nothing but the sum of these two coadjoint orbit action. So in other words, if you have some Liouville field phi that solves Liouville equation, then on shell these functions f and g, they satisfy the equations of motion of this geometric action. So again, by this we kind of made the loop to the Liouville action by using this Nielsen approach. But this is again something very well known, at least for the gravity people. and in the works of Henault and Maus and Schwimmer, that's how they actually argued that basically the solutions of Liouville in the context of 3D gravity are nothing but solutions of two geometric actions. There's some interesting works on that actually direction, clarifying some steps recently by Jensen and Kotler that may be also important for complexity, but for now that's all. This construction has recently also appeared in the works of Gautam Mandal and collaborators, and very closely related works by Oblak on the Berry phases of the Virasoro group. That's all I wanted to mention. There's some, yes.
I think you should be.
Yeah, I'm done. So there was like some comments about 2D gravity that I will not have time. Just let me comment on something I would be happy to discuss. So there are other choices of the metrics on this Virasoro group, and it would be interesting to explore this further. Namely, as I told you, once we have some unitary operator with this now generalizations to arbitrary to generators of Ln, once we compute, say, Mora-Katan or this derivative, we need something, as I told you, like a Killing form. And what we use with Javier was kind of natural because, from our perspective, you can just basically compute now two-point function in some particular primary state H of this Ln and some other Lm. That will do as a metric. But actually, there are some, you can go back more into kind of classical mechanics, and you can see what kind of metrics on the Virasoro group people studied. And then you know that these LNs are just nothing but the vector fields of this type, z to n plus 1 over dz. And then the geodesics on this Virasoro group, or in general, the framework of geodesic on the group manifold is equivalent to solving Euler-Arnold equations. And actually, there's a very cute one choice of the metric for the Virasoro group that has to do with this one. So you have really the element of the Virasoro group with the central charge and the other one. And then you choose this kind of like a version of the Killing Cartan form by just integrating over the circle of this vector fields and then multiplying the central charges or the extensions. And it was actually shown long time ago that Euler-Arnold equations or geodesic on this right invariant metric on the Virasoro group actually become the famous KdV equation that describes for you the nonlinear waves on the Virasoro group. So it will be very interesting to study this for, you know, the consequences for the complexity in the CFT on the Virasoro group. If you forget about the extension, actually this equation, this KdV or this Euler-Arnold becomes just Berger's equation that also appeared recently. There are other choices that might be very interesting and maybe Fubini study metric on this objects of unitaries and so on that I would be happy to discuss. Okay, so there is some summary. I don't have time, and let me just conclude. We have a proposal for ADS tensor networks and path integral complexity for NEC. It's kind of nice and geometric and universal, but works for 2D. We get classical geometries from minimization of path integral complexity. There are still many open questions how to go beyond how to study extended symmetries, maybe transition amplitudes, and actually we're also working recently on purifications in that framework. Applications to tensor networks, can we actually now go back to beautiful literature on tensor networks and find any use of this? And actually there has been some work by Jens Eisert and his students or postdocs that studied hyperbolic tensor networks and showed that they work quite well. So maybe, you know, studying negative tensor networks with negative curvature might actually be useful for tensor network people as well. But then the complexity, in the second part, I try to argue that complexity has to do with dynamics of geometry and gravity. And for a particular choice of universal gates in CFT that implement conformal transformation, we can make a link with this classical gravity of Polyakov. There's still a lot of ambiguity in the choice of metric, and you know, there's still a room to improve or maybe fix some, work out some precise questions about complexity in the simple setup. And finally, of course, we would like to make a connection with gravity and proposals by Rob and Lenny and company. But I really want to stress that this QFT complexity deserves its own life. It's a very nice object. We should be studying it as we study entanglement entropy. And that's all. Thank you. Sorry for going over time. Let me just remind you that actually we have this really great workshop, and this It From Qubit School, hopefully not the last one, between May and June in Kyoto. And please apply. I think the initial deadline is like February something, but make sure to apply for it. And see you in Kyoto.
OK, any more questions for Pavel?
So what role did Large C play in the first part?
In the path integral?
Yeah.
So at least for vacuum and thermofield double, it didn't play any role. For less universal states, so actually for these primary states that we studied, we could match it with a time slice of conical singularity, but actually only in the Large C expansion. So you can see that the true time slice of the gravity is like this metric, but the relation by with the singularity and the dimension is not this one, but by the square root of 1 minus 24h over c. So if you expand it at Large C, then this matches our prescription. So it seems like for less universal states, for primaries, you need to think more like where did we actually secretly use Large C limit.
Yeah, the reason why I asked is because this suggests that there really is an integration over the 2D metric explicitly, but if you're at Large C, then that's a saddle point evaluation. And of course, here, what you just referred to is this KPZ scaling, mm-hmm. which dresses all of the weights of insertion. So do you think that's what's secretly happening, that away from Large C, you're really doing the functional integral?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
Questions?
Hangman entropy beyond single interval, is that expression that you wrote down?
Mm-hmm. Not that I know. We're working on entanglement of purification, and there we have to compute again entanglement for like two intervals, but some kind of something between entanglement for two intervals and one. And again, that you can express in terms of Liouville field. But for 2D, for two intervals, I think it's not going to be as universal. I think you can, maybe better way to answer your question is that you want to relate entropy to some conformal map that Liouville it implements, and that's related to, if you look, for example, at these works by John Cardy and Eric Tony on deriving modular Hamiltonians, you can always come up with some map that gives you entanglement entropy for single interval, but for two intervals, there are some ambiguities in defining this map. So I think this will not be as universal as
a
single interval.
Part of the uniformization map?
Yes, yes.
Even in your Large C limit, you won't pick out a universal
structure? We can. At Large C, yes.
Yeah.
Final comments, questions? Not, I think we should thank Pavel.